It's Saturday. It's not Monday. So why do we have a new episode of In the Bullpen? Well, sometimes you have to be ready for the unexpected. Are you ready for the call?
Let me hear you! Go get low! A one, a two, a three!
Welcome to In the Bullpen with Mark Dewey. You're listening to the Fight Laugh Feast Network. Thank you for joining us.
And look who's coming up. High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
Well, there are things that we expect, and there are things that we don't expect. There are calls we're looking forward to, and calls we hope we never receive. Brent Suter, a left-handed pitcher from Milwaukee Brewers, is our guest today. And we will see how he has missed some important calls, at least for a time, but also always answers the call. Brent, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Really honored to be here.
Absolutely. So the first question I have for you is a question I would ask anyway, and that is, how's your family doing?
We're doing pretty well. My family and my parents and Aaron's parents, my wife Aaron's parents, have been healthy for the most part this whole time, and just kind of spending some distance time together with our extended family, and then just spending a lot of quality time with our immediate family has been kind of a blessing in disguise. You know, kind of that pause for just making sure the intimacy in our family is strong and bonds are strong. So it's been We're doing well.
Good. And that's why I said I would ask you this question anyway, because I think one of the things in baseball and outside of baseball, with all that's gone on, almost everybody would say one of the positives is the ability to spend more time with my family. And I'm sure that as much as you miss baseball, that is a positive. How old is your son now?
19 months.
Okay. And he's doing well?
Yeah, he's doing great. He's full of energy for sure. He's actually been quite entertaining. I mean, it's kept us on our toes, so we haven't really had too much boredom, you know, because we're constantly trying to get him learning and exploring and constantly stimulated. So it's been actually great to have him. Great quality time, like I said before. It's been awesome.
Excellent. And now, after spring training got canceled, did you go back home right away, or did you stay in Arizona for a little bit? You went home right away?
We stayed, I think it was about 6 or 7 days after spring training got canceled, that we kind of wanted to see how long it would be before we packed everything up and headed back home. And then when it became apparent that it would be a lot longer than just a couple week delay, we packed up right away, got some flights out, and left right before all the flights started getting canceled from Arizona to Cincinnati. So we got out of there just in time, I guess, and we've been in Cincinnati, I think, since mid-March, so it's been quite a bit of time at home here.
Yeah, so that's 2.5 months, maybe a little bit more. What have you been doing? How have you been staying prepared in case there is a season, being at home and also not just simply away from Arizona, but with all the other things going on? What have you been doing to stay prepared for the season?
Yeah, so I've been basically doing a lot of the off-season routine that I normally do. So I'm fortunate to have a home gym in the basement and a throwing area inside and outside, just in case the weather's nice, I can go out there and throw into a net and kind of get the cleats on and everything. But down here, I just kind of throw into a wall, basically as hard as I can, as quickly as I can for about 10 minutes or so. And then I've been throwing a couple of bullpens a week. So my assistant and my agent has a facility right down the road where it's kind of been, you know, closed off for the public, but I've been able to get in there and get some bullpens in. And then trying to do some, stay sharp with like the visualization, all the flexibility stuff, all the training. About 6 days a week, I take about one day off a week, just kind of let everything recover. But I've been going pretty hard about 6 days a week, really since spring training got canceled. So I feel really good. My arm feels great. Mine feels sharp, so I'm ready to go whenever. I just want the green light, you know.
So you're throwing against your basement wall. Are you working on PFBs at the same time, or that's got to be interesting?
Yeah, basically. there's a table against the wall, and then I put one of our couch cushions up against there. So it's been I've had a couple errant throws, I guess, nothing like crazy into the wall or anything. Just kind of some curveballs that I spiked that kind of hit like the floor where the cushion meets the floor. So had some interesting bounces, but certainly helping the reaction time and the glove work while I'm throwing. So it's been good.
So you are obviously ready if there is baseball. So here's the next obvious question. From your perspective, do you think that being ready is going to be an issue in 2020, or do you think you're going to have a lot more time to get ready before baseball is played?
So that for me, that question, I could be ready to go in game outings just in a couple weeks. I think like if we started spring training tomorrow, I could be ready by the end of that spring training, I think. So I'm in a good place right now, physically, mentally. In terms of what I think, I really hope the season, I hope we have a June 10th or June 15th spring training 2.0 resumption and then get games going by July 4th. I think that'd be really special to get games going. I'm really hoping we can come to terms and figure out all the logistics of the regulatory stuff and all the health and safety concerns and the economic concerns, of course. So definitely hoping for that, and I'd be ready for that with plenty of time to spare, for sure.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, you are the player rep for the Brewers, and so that means you're involved in this. All players are involved in these kind of things, but in particular the player rep. Mm-hmm. So thank you for doing that, and I do hope that you're right and that all of this can come together.
Yeah, for sure. It's actually my first year being the official union rep. I was a player alternate the last several years, and then basically our rep and a lot of our alternates got traded away, so it was basically like, hey, Brent, you want to do it? So, I was like, sure, what could go wrong? Oh, a pandemic. Okay.
Yeah, way to step right into it, huh?
Right in the fire, you know. But that's how you grow, is by getting molded in the fire, I guess. So it's been a good learning experience. I've been grateful for it.
All right, well, good. All right, I want to fire off some things that have happened to you in your professional career. And I would like you to answer just whatever comes to your mind, whether it's what you were thinking at the time, your reaction at the time, how you look back on it now. So I've got a list here of things, and I'm just going to ask you your first thought or the first thing that comes to your mind when I bring it up. You ready?
Yep.
All right. In 2012, when you were drafted in the 31st round by the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah, for some reason cornhole comes to mind. I actually missed the call from the scout because I was playing cornhole with some of my buddies who were in town and my brother outside, because I was really paying attention to the rounds for probably 25 rounds, and I was just like, I can't really just pay attention to this anymore. I got to take a break. And so I was out there, missed the call. My dad calls me and goes, hey, the Mariners drafted you. I was like, oh, sweet. And then we looked it up, and it was an M, but it was the Brewers M. Like, what were you looking at there? So, yeah, cornhole comes to mind. But it was, I mean, such a fun day. We ended up going out to eat that night with my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, and her family and my family, and it was a great celebration. Just really warm memories there.
And now this is actually a follow-up. It's not a reaction question. So some people may not know that you are a Harvard graduate. You were drafted out of Harvard. And I tried to find this out, and I couldn't. I know that the Brewers also have Noah Zavalos in the minor league system, who's a Harvard guy. But do you know how many Harvard guys are currently playing professional baseball beside the two of you?
I know Tanner Anderson and Sean Poppin are also on big league rosters, or Tanner at least was on the big league roster for a couple teams last year. And then I think there are two other guys who got drafted last year. One guy was, I think, a 10th rounder, and another guy was in, like, the team. So I forget which organizations they're with, but I want to say there's about six of us total.
Okay. All right. Now back to the questions. Second question. Pitching in Colorado Springs.
First thing that comes to mind are some of the craziness that I've never seen before. I probably won't see since, some of the crazy altitude and weather patterns going on. But it's one of those places, kind of like we were talking about, you get thrown into fire. It's a challenging place to pitch. You got to find out what works for you. For me, my curveball didn't break as much there, so I had to rely more on fastball location, my cutter movement, and then change-ups for sure. So just kind of have to figure out what works for you and just deal with all the adversity as strongly as you can. A lot of guys kind of let it consume them and let them use it as an excuse, but if you don't do that, it can really prepare you well for the big league. So I just remember some crazy weather and wind and crazy bounces. It was just a crazy place to play, but it kind of felt like you were playing on the moon in some games, especially when the wind was blowing out. But it was I really credit it with helping me get to the big leagues because it was a place I could separate myself kind of from the pack, where you know, I was able to have some movement going on, put up some decent numbers, and you know, being a guy who doesn't throw hard, I was able to kind of separate myself a little bit from the pack with just numbers up in Colorado Springs. So I'm grateful for the place. I had a great time there.
Yes, and you had great success there. And for people that don't know, it is probably the worst place on the planet that they actually have a baseball field to pitch. And you really did separate yourself out because you put up some phenomenal numbers at a location in it that truly is the hardest place to pitch in affiliated baseball. So it's just,
yeah.
All right, next question. Your major league debut.
Yeah, well, I was supposed to pitch that night for AAA or the night before for AAA, and I remember I missed a bunch of calls from my manager because I had accidentally put my laptop on top of my phone, so the vibrate wasn't doing anything. So I get a call from Tim Dillard actually in the morning, a FaceTime. I'm like, what is Dillard doing calling me? And then he answers and gives it right to Rick Sweet, who's our AAA manager, and he says, hey, you're not pitching for me tonight. You're pitching against the Mariners tomorrow. I was like, what? And I turn around, and my wife is bawling, crying, and I just started tearing up, and it's just, you know, I can't even believe it. Our flight was in, like, 4 hours, so got everything packed up as quickly as we could and went there. And I just remember the whole day was just, you know, this undercurrent of nerves and just, like, excitement. And, you know, it was a good lineup. They had Nelson Cruz, Kyle Seager, and Robinson Cano in the heart of the order, and they were all in the lineup, and so it was a challenge. I did okay, you know, through three innings, and then started getting hit a little bit in the fourth and fifth inning, so almost made it through five innings, but they saw enough where they just put me in the pen for the rest of the year, and I had more success out of the pen, but it was just trying to keep the nerves as quiet as possible, even though it was almost impossible to do that, and I remember on my jog, I took it all in on my, like, pregame warm-up jog around the outfield and just gave myself a second to just give thanks and say a quick, prayer of thanks to God. And just it's just an amazing feeling of, like, wow, I'm actually, no matter what, I've played in the big league. So, it was amazing.
And that is a great accomplishment for anybody, but especially for guys like you and me that were drafted in the later rounds.
Yes.
It, you know, there's just so much there, and it is good and right to thank the Lord for that opportunity. All right. Mm-hmm. I think it was 4 days later. I could be wrong on that, but your first major league win.
Yes. So it was also my first relief appearance and my first time pitching in Miller Park. I came in against the Rockies. I think we were down one. I got through it. I'll put it that way. I loaded the bases with two outs and then gave up kind of a line drive to Nick Hundley. But luckily the shift, Scooter Jeanette was playing a little bit towards the middle and he caught it. And I was just like, oh, man, I got out of that one because it was looking a little hairy there. And then the next inning, I think we put up two or three runs and ended up getting the win. It was crazy. I couldn't believe it. That I, you know, got a win kind of just by luck or more or less some luck there, second outing in the big leagues. And it was just great feeling. And you know, a lot of celebration. And actually Corey Knebel, who's a good friend of mine on the team, he got his first save that same game. So, we both had our tie that we both got our first win and save in the same game. And he's gone on to be an all-star closer and, I've gone on to somewhat more mediocre, but I've been kind of I've been more of the hybrid guy. I haven't been piling up wins like he's been piling up saves. But it was just a cool moment for you know, we were friends and still are friends to have that moment shared together in the same game. Was great.
Yes. All right. Now we're going to go to a much more difficult situation. finding out and then that you needed and then undergoing Tommy John surgery and then all of the rehab that follows something like that?
Yeah. 2018, I felt like I was just turning a corner in the season. I was starting to, find the groove. It was really, the team was winning a bunch of games and I was pitching, which is a good thing. And then, it really started, I made a diving play to tag somebody out at first base and it kind of, my whole body felt a little funky after that dive. And then, my arm was a little sore that night and the next day. And I thought we treated it as best we could. And then the next game, I just felt something go, like a little snap or it just kind of felt like a snake in there. Like was like uncoiling. It was really weird. But I pitched through it for a couple innings and told the training staff after the game, I was like, yeah, something's a little funky. So, long story short, ended up getting an MRI a couple weeks later and, I was fully torn and had to have surgery. Definitely, I allowed myself to get really kind of sad and get some emotions out at the doctor's office. I was just in there. My wife was in there, luckily, with me and just really crying for a good 20, 30 minutes in there. And then after that, I was fortunate. I let it pretty much all out there. And then after that, it was just kind of, okay, what are we going to do about it? I came to the park right after that, and my teammates and coaches were so supportive and, saying you're going to come back stronger than ever. And I started to believe that and ended up getting surgery back here in Cincinnati and the rehab team here and the rehab team in Arizona where I rehab most of the year in 2019 were just incredible. Like such good people, so dedicated to their jobs and to the people they're rehabbing. And I couldn't have asked for anything better really throughout the whole rehab process. Everything was smooth in every way and was able to come back and started my rehab assignment in really late July, about a year to date after my surgery. Started pitching in minor league games and then 13 months later was back in the big leagues and had a really emotional kind of re-debut, if you will. I pitched in Miller Park against the Astros. I think it was a tie game. Bregman, Alvarez do up and got Bregman on a strikeout by first at bat back. And I was like, okay, sweet, sweet. And then Alvarez taking me deep the next at bat. And you could just feel the whole crowd go, huh? like that's not what's supposed to happen. But it was, we ended up tying the game. And then I think we lost that game, but won the next one. And then ended up going on a really good run in September to make the playoffs. So, definitely a lot of good memories from the whole rehab process, really. It was made a lot of great relationships with other guys who are rehabbing and my rehab counselors or the training staff, and it was really a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, it's a great credit to both them and you because you talk about that home run. Between the minor league games that you pitched prior to getting back to Milwaukee and then the big league games you pitched, it's the only run you gave up. 35 innings.
Yeah.
The only run you gave up, and you were named the NL Reliever of the Month for September. So, again, a tremendous tribute to the work that they did with you and the work you put in, because to come back that quickly and then to do that well if you were never hurt is amazing. But when you look at the numbers you put up from essentially late July, early August through the end of the season, they were phenomenal.
Thank you. Yeah, it was, like you said, a testament to them, and I couldn't have done it without them. It was definitely a wonderful time, fun baseball, but also just like, texting them and keeping them updated, like, hey, I'm feeling great still. Everything's going great. So it was just total team effort for sure.
Okay, now kind of a good, bad part. Back-to-back postseasons or back-to-back years, the Brewers make the postseason. The first time they do, you're hurt. The next time they do, you're a big factor in helping that come about with the September you had in which you were the reliever of the month in the NL. What was the difference there? I mean, obviously you're happy for your teammates, but what was the difference in, okay, I'm hurt, I can't help, I can't pitch in the playoffs, and then the next year I'm helping, I lead us to the playoffs, and I get to pitch in the playoffs?
Yeah, so the year before, everyone did an awesome job of making me feel part of it. Coaches, fans, players, everybody was really wanted me around, and that really meant a lot. But it's different when you're contributing down the stretch in those big games and big moments. And so the next year, it kind of felt like almost a full circle. Like, wow, this is what it was like last year. I mean, kind of the feeling they were feeling last year and how special it was. And you play the game. Some guys play the game 15, 20 years and never get to the playoffs. But to be able to say I pitched in the playoffs and to be a part of really two great teams is really special and something I'll cherish for the rest of my life. But, yeah, it was definitely a lot more fun on the field than from the bench to be in those runs.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, two more. I think it was in February, this past February. I'm not sure, but you signed a 2-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like, knowing that you had that in place?
Yeah, so the whole arbitration process was very interesting. You know, just hearing it basically was a long time of waiting around, and then the last week trying to get something settled, and then we missed the deadline, but then right before we were going to go to the arbitration hearing, the Brewers reached out and said, hey, give us something that'll help us settle this. And, we ended up coming to terms on a 2-year deal, and just to be able to kind of have that exhale, like, you know, wow, we are going to be in the Brewers uniform, for another 2 years at least. It was just really great feeling. You know, the security that came with that in a lot of ways, cause nothing really is guaranteed in baseball until you sign one of those guaranteed deals. So, I mean, obviously it's some things have changed with the pandemic. I guess nothing's actually guaranteed, but, to be able to sign that and, you know, the happiness and peace that, you know, my wife felt with some of the financial stuff and the, you know, the moving around stuff. We said big time prayers of thanks for that one. And my family and her family were very, very happy and, proud and all that. So that was a special moment for sure. And, definitely warm memories there, and got to give thanks to God for that one.
Yes. Congratulations. Well deserved. Last one.
Thank you.
Last one on the questions here, that how did you feel or how did you react? Are you ready for it?
Yes.
Today, the news about Mauricio Dubon. Here's Brett Sutter going deep to center field. It's gone! Brett Sutter to dead center field.
Talk to me.
Yeah, that was quite a moment. That game, I kind of pseudo started it. Wade Miley got hurt like two batters into the game, so I came in out of the bullpen and pitched some good innings out of the bullpen. And then I think it was the third inning, I got up to bat. I was a leadoff hitter, and you're not supposed to swing at the first pitch if you're a pitcher leading off an inning. So for some reason, I saw the ball up, and I just didn't even think, and I just swung, and I didn't really feel it off the bat, which is a good thing, but I did not think it was going out. I thought it might get past the center fielder and might be able to get a double out of this, and then just kept going and going. And then when I saw it bounce off the batter's eye, I almost leapt out of my uniform. I feel like running around first base. But it was crazy. And then it just like after that, it felt like a dream, you know, like a cloud nine, like everyone was going crazy. High five and Eddie Cedar and Low K when I was coming around and getting just, you know, absolute high fives and hugs and everything at the dugout. I had to like go in the bathroom and wash my face with cold water for like a minute straight just to get my heart rate down a little bit because it was just so exciting. And I knew I had to go back out and pitch at least a couple more innings. So that was one of my favorite personal baseball moments of all time for sure. It was crazy.
Yeah, and we didn't hear it on the broadcast, the clip that I played, but it was against like some guy that would just come up from AAA, right?
a couple of years before, I think he came up from AAA, but no, it was off of the reigning Cy Young award winner, Corey Kluber. So, yeah, that made it that much more special, I guess. That guy is a beast out there. So to be able to get one off him is just, I don't know how to describe it. Maybe more of a blind squirrel finding a nut, but it happened and it was awesome.
It was, and you can hit. I mean, that doesn't mean there's a lot of guys can hit. Woody can hit too. So he takes Kershaw deep. You take Kluber deep. So you guys hit home runs off of just multiple Cy Young Award winners. It's just that easy, I guess. I don't know.
Woody's a much better hitter than me. I'll put it that way. That guy can swing it. But yeah, that was crazy fun. Yeah, that was a special time. And he and I are some, you know, really good friends to this day. So to share kind of those moments that same year was awesome.
Yeah. Well, obviously, even in the short time we've been talking, we see that you've had a lot of success. You graduated from Harvard. You were a 31st round draft pick. You've made it to the big leagues. You've been successful in the big leagues. You took a 2-time Cy Young Award winner deep straightaway center field with a bomb. What would you say are the keys to your success, both on the field and off?
Yeah, I think on the field, like I said, I don't really throw hard, but I think consistently competing is something that I've done really since I got drafted. I don't really beat myself a whole lot. I can, you know, try to put the pressure on the hitter to swing and to kind of feel on the defensive by throwing strikes, attacking my spots. I'm trying to have good mound presence out there, working with a decent pace. So I'd say definitely consistently competing. And then off the field, I think just kind of bringing it every day, trying to be as good as I can be in whatever we're doing, whether it's workouts, whether it's, you know, being a teammate, whether it's being a husband or dad. It's trying to do, give it my all in whatever I'm doing, I think, and that translates into baseball as well, at least into baseball. But I try to do that in all areas of my life, and obviously I don't do it perfectly by any means. We're all imperfect, as that's very clear in the Bible, but just trying to, you know, live my life and give something God would be proud of, you know, because we always hear saying, you know, the gifts we have, the talents we have are God's gift to us. What we do with them is our gift back to God. So I try to give it back to try to do well for God. And, you know, I'm not perfect, but I try to do my best on and off the field.
Well, one of the things I think you had two or three starts in Wisconsin back in 2013, and then you came to Brevard where I was the pitching coach at the time. And one of the first things that I noticed, because I really didn't know you prior to that at all, maybe saw you a little bit in spring training. But, you know, there are a lot of people, in particular pitchers, starting pitchers, who when they've pitched in the game and they've gone six or seven innings and they come out, they're rah-rah, you know, they're always into it. But then the other 4 days, they're just kind of hanging out. Whereas with you, you came out of the game and you were into it, but you were into it and cheering on your teammates and cheering on whoever was on the mound the other 4 days. I saw that right away, and it instantly caused me to like you before I even knew who you were. So I want to do something here. So humor me, because I just pumped you up. So humor me. It's just going to be a hypothetical situation in about every way conceivable. All right. But here's the situation. You have just pitched 8 2/3 innings, and you have a 3-run lead, and the manager was trying to get you through that ninth inning for the complete game, but he just couldn't do so. And you actually hit your pitch limit. You went beyond it, and you have to come out of the game, and there's bases loaded with two outs. You have a 3-run lead, and I come in to try to get that final out. Okay. So you're in the dugout. You're in the dugout and you're watching me, and I'm going to give you a pitch by pitch. And I just want you to show people and show me what you would be like trying to encourage me for that final out. All right.
Yep.
First pitch, ball one.
Hey, you're good. You got this. Get right back in the count right here. Even it up. We'll tack this guy right here. Come on.
Strike one, 1-1.
Nice. Good pitch, baby. Good pitch. Get another one. Let's get ahead and let's finish them off.
Next pitched. It's a strike, and it is hit about 400 feet, but it's fouled on the left field line.
Okay. Still have another one for you, babe. Another one. Here we go. Finish them off right here. Here we go, Mark. Come on, Marcus. You got this, babe. You got this.
Next pitch, ball two. 2-2.
We're good. Finish them off right here, babe. You got this. Good thoughts right here, Mark. Good thoughts.
I go 3-2 on the next pitch.
Okay, make a pitch right here, baby. You got this.
Next pitch, pop up, shortstop, game over.
Nice, Mark. I knew you could do it, baby. Nice job, man. Way to finish it out.
All right, now we're going to switch gears on you. Same situation. Coming in the same situation. And the guy hits a bomb for a grand slam, game over. But, as the ball bounces on the other side of the left field fence, it's no longer you that is possessing your body, it's Gollum. What do you say?
Oh, my God. Lord, you can do it, brother. You can do it.
Oh, I had to get that. I've seen you do that. I just had to. The bad thing is this isn't, I don't have any video. Otherwise, I'd ask you to do a lot of other things as well, but you got to be able to see your face, you know, but that's great. That's awesome. That just made my day. You know, you have a lot of interests that go beyond baseball, and at some point in time, maybe we need to get together for another interview just to cover all of that. But I was watching an interview, and I think it was a relatively recent interview that you had with Scott Linebrink, who's a former major league pitcher. And toward the end of that, there was something that I had not heard of, and I would like you to address it because you got involved in it. I think it's called Water Mission. Do I have that right?
Yes. Yes.
So what is that, and how are you involved with that?
Yeah, they're a non-profit organization, charity that installs water treatment plants in places that really are water deprived, and they basically go into these places, dig a groundwater well, and they teach the people, the locals, how to operate it. They put solar panels on it so it can be off the grid, and it pumps out clean water and really helps communities thrive, because one of the absolute staples of life is you need clean water to live and to be able to grow your village or have your family survive. So they, what I love about it is, they, like I said, they empower the people, with learning how to operate the machinery. So if something goes wrong, they know how to fix it. It's no dependency. It's just empowerment. And what I love is that you can dig a well and plan it for relatively, it's not cheap, but it's not crazy expensive. And then the amount of reach and, impact it has on people's lives, incredible. It just keeps giving, and it's a really great way to share the love of Christ, because God has talked about how many times people come up to him and go, why do you do this for us, why are you being so nice to us by doing this? And he goes, I'm trying to follow Jesus' example. And so then that's a way to spread the gospel. So it's definitely a charity we just started getting involved with heavily last year, and they're going to have like a wine night in Milwaukee. Really, it was going to be last week to help support Water Mission, but fortunately with COVID, that didn't happen. But we want to do it again, or plan it again for next year, and then just trying to spread the awareness of how great of an organization is. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. And for those of you for those of us that would want to know more about the things that you're interested in and involved in, also that would like to see some maybe of the facial expressions. I know that I saw you reading a bedtime story, I think, to your son. You have a Twitter account. Where would they go if they want to follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, so my Twitter account is Brutert 24, so Brutert 24. And then my Instagram is Brent Suter 35. I would have changed my Twitter account to match my Instagram or vice versa, but Jim Carrey sent me gave me a shout out on one of our videos we made a couple of years ago, like a Dumb and Dumber spoof, and I couldn't have that not being in my Twitter handle anymore.
Yeah,
that holding on to Brutter.
That was with was that you and Josh Hader and JJ?
Yes.
Yeah, that's good stuff. People got to go check that out. Well, Brent, I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, and I hope that in a very short period of time, I'm going to be able to turn the TV on and watch you pitch.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks. I hope we're on there. I hope we're out on the field soon, but thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You bet. Thank you. It's interesting that Brent Suter missed maybe the two most important calls a professional baseball player gets. The first one, that he has become a professional baseball player by being drafted, and then his first call up to the big leagues. But despite that, Brent Suter is a man who answers the call in some unusual situations. He's ready to start. He's ready to relieve. He's ready to start when he thought he was going to relieve. He is the kind of guy that baseball, really good, true baseball, is all about. He takes the ball. He goes out. He competes. He supports his teammates. And of course, I think you heard from that interview that he has accepted the call as a Christian man and father and husband. One of the advantages, as we mentioned in the interview, I had Brent back in 2013 in Brevard County, and one of the advantages, my family have always traveled with me wherever I've been, and so they've been able to go to the games, all the home games and some away games of wherever I've coached. And we were in Brevard in 2012 and 2013, And Brevard County was a part of the Florida State League. And so you're playing in big ballparks because they're the spring training complexes of the major league teams. And the fan attendance is not typically real high in the Florida State League and definitely not at Brevard County. So when my family went to the games at Brevard, sometimes on certain nights, we might make up half the crowd. And one of the things that my children loved was getting a chance to sit next to the two pitchers that would be charting in the stands, starting pitchers that would be pitching the following day and then the day after that. And they would sit up when they were charting and doing the radar gun, and they would get to talk to them and get to know them. And a lot of times the pitchers would let my children handle the radar gun. And so my children got a chance to meet some really good people like Brent Suter. And one of my daughters, Tabitha, really loved Brent Suter. And I hope that you heard from the interview why. And if you really got a chance to be around him and meet him, you would understand even more. And so in the providence of God, it seems appropriate that the interview that I had with Brent took place, and we finished up late Friday afternoon. And a few hours later, I received an unexpected call, actually an unexpected visit from a deputy in our local sheriff's department. My daughter Tabitha and her husband Alan and our seven-month-old granddaughter Eleanor came to visit us, and we had a wonderful 10 days, and they were heading back to Helena, Montana, where they live, and we received a text. They were outside of Billings, less than 4 hours away from their home, and all was good. But when I received that call, I found out that shortly after that text that we received from my daughter, there was a car accident. And my daughter Tabitha, who so loved Brent Suter, died. It's not a call I was ready for. But the good news is, it was a call home she was ready for. Her name is Tabitha Joy. And of course, we gave her that soon after she came out of the womb. But Joy expressed the way she was throughout her young life. She died just a few weeks after her 20th birthday. She was a very joyful person. And because she was ready for the call home by the Lord, the sovereign and good God, she has perfect joy now. I wanted to do this podcast in honor of her. I wanted to do it while I'm still at least partially numb. And I wanted to do it to ask us all the question, are we ready for the call? I hope you don't mind that I will not be ending this podcast as I usually do. There will be a conversation for another day. I, at this point in time, can't say when that will be because a lot will be going on in the next several days. But I want to dedicate this to my daughter. And I would ask you all to pray for our family and pray especially for her husband, Alan, as he needs our prayers. And I want to go out by playing just a part of a song, the song that was playing when I danced with my daughter on her wedding day just over 2 years ago. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your prayers.
The first moment I saw your face, I was moved by amazing grace, and I cried like a baby, just like I'll do walking you down the aisle. I found fortune like diamonds in the love of a daughter, worth more than all the gold in the world. And they say that a son is the pride of a father, but my heart belongs to my little girl. Diamonds and daughters, precious and few. Diamonds and daughters, timeless and true. Don't you ever forget that your heart. And daughters.